This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
All right, hello to you. Rolling through a Wednesday in the Umpqua Valley, and Mike Winters in here again. 20 years you've been doing this.
Yeah, and you haven't fired me yet.
Wow. Well, it's hard to find people who've got as much insight as you have after decades of doing this.
Well, yeah, I've done it for a few decades, that's for sure. But welcome to the show, and this is kind of a... Oh, just a lot of different kind of topics, depending on the time of year, et cetera. But if you have any questions about anything, you can call 673-4464, put you on the air, ask your question, I'll give you an answer, and you'll be happy.
But you know, I'm curious, though, is there anything we could do to stop weeds from growing in the spring?
Yes, we can scorch the earth with fire and ice.
Well, I'm not sure that is necessarily what I had in mind, but they are certainly growing quickly in the last couple of weeks.
Oh, yeah, and we get a couple of warm days here and there, and they say, whoa, let's go, man, let's push. And, yeah, you got to keep on top of them early. Spray them, castor on them, do whatever you can to fight them and keep them from, containing your entire landscape.
Yeah, well, we've gone from being so miserable that you don't want to be in the yard to looking around and going, oh, I should have been out here 2 or 3 weeks ago.
Yeah, yeah, and most people have that same feeling. Most people go, oh, yeah, I'll get it next week, and then it rains all that week, and then... Man, where'd those weeds come from? Well, you're supposed to get them a week ago.
But. Right, and I came home Sunday, and I knew that it was going to be raining for much of the week. And though I'd been out, though I'd been gone, you know, since really early in the morning, realized that I better jump on the lawn. And boy, it was a bit of a challenge because it probably could have been cut 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And that it was raining.
Yeah, and it was wet, so that doubled up the time and the effort and energy and all that. But if you had let it go another week, you'd have to have a cow come in and, you know, eat her down for you before you could mow it.
Yeah, that would be an utter mess. But
that's good.
Thank you very much. I'll be here all day.
You were quick.
Or I have been here all day.
I know. I haven't. I've only been here about 20 minutes, so there.
All right. Move along.
Moving along. Well, you know, earlier this afternoon, I went home for a short time since I'm retired. I went home for a short time to just see how things are going, and it was sunny, and it was kind of warm, like 60 degrees. So I took the chair out onto the front yard, and I sat in, and I'm soaking up the sun for about, 15 minutes, and then these gigantic black clouds showed up over the ridge, and it got closer and closer and closer, and pretty soon the sun was gone, and the temperature, I think, dropped 5 degrees. Instantly, and that was my spring today. And quite frankly, one of these days it may stop raining, and we can then maybe till our gardens and begin the planting process, because right now it would be premature to try to do it because it would be a waste of your time, effort, energy, and gasoline in your machine. So, but like my soil in my garden beds, they're raised beds, you know, up about 2.5 feet tall, and it very well drained with, you know, good premium mix in there, so it doesn't have standing water, but it's still very, very wet. And if I planted any seeds or small plants, they'd probably die and rot in there because it's just not warm enough to go, and it's just too wet. So, and on one hand, I'm thankful for the rain this spring. We need more than an afternoon of warm sun to have any real gardening success. So we have to continue to be patient, and hopefully April will be the month that it begins to have more than one sunny day every 10 days, and maybe the temperatures will go up to maybe 65 or even 70, which would be perfect for planting your gardens and mowing your lawns that haven't been mowed for months, and they're, you know, kind of long and wet and almost impossible to mow. So it's coming. I just don't know when. I can't put my finger on it, but... But like I say, while I'm thankful for the rain, because we've needed it, but two or three days in a row of sunshine would be a real blessing, and it'd be a lot of fun to have. But on the other hand, you can take some large containers, if you're, you know, chomping at the bit to start your gardens, and get a few veggies going without a lot of hassle and labor, because they're in a pot. You know, if you get a pot that's, say, an 18-inch diameter pot and, at least a foot deep or 18 inches deep, you can grow, like, three tomatoes in that pot or pepper plants. And there's no real time invested, just, you know, filling up the pot and putting in a few plants or a few seeds and letting them grow. And they're not going to get drowned because the drainage is so good, the soil is so good. They may not grow as quickly until there's actual warmth in the sky and that sun is shining on them, but they're not going to rot because there is good drainage in there, and at least you get a few veggies going without a lot of hassle and labor, and you can see some progress, and then you go, wow, man, I can't wait to get the rest of the garden in, or something like that. And it's easy. So if you're like a zucchini lover, put one zucchini plant in a large pot, and it'll provide you more than you can eat. It doesn't matter. Those vines grow so fast, they grow out of the pot, and then they would grow down to the ground or the deck or whatever, and then zucchinis would pop out all over the place. You'd have a pickup load of them before you knew it, and you say, why, I didn't listen to that guy. I don't want to zucchini forest here on my deck. But at any rate, they're good if you fry them up with onions and peppers. But in a large pot, it's gonna provide you all that you can eat, and this can be done with, like I say, little time, little money, and you still can get an early jump on your vegetable garden progress. And one reason I built my raised beds was to just reduce the labor time and kneeling in the dirt. I mean, I've done a lot of years of kneeling in the dirt to work on my garden. But raised beds make the whole farming thing very easy, and also less weeds to pull, actually. And the only plant that didn't do well was corn. My boxes, they're about 30 feet long and 5 feet wide. And I had the tomatoes and the peppers and the zucchini, only one zucchini, and a few other items. And then on one end of it, on the sunniest end of it, I planted, I think 5 rows of corn. And that's probably way too close together. But I thought, I'm going to see how it's going to do. And it sprouted and it was growing and looking green and healthy. But then as it got to be about 3 or 4 feet tall, I don't know what happened, because they tasseled up and they actually had little ears of corn on them, but they were very skinny, immature, and not edible at all. And the other problem was they were shading some of my other plants, so I just ripped them out. And I thought, if I'm going to grow corn, I got to grow it in the ground somewhere where they're going to get a lot of sun. And that's one plant I would not put in a raised planter box unless you got a lot of room and a lot of sunshine. So that was my only failure in my raised boxes. But anything, we put flowers in between our plants and ground covers in there just for color, and it also attracts pollinizers, which you want to attract pollinizers, i.e. honeybees, and there are other insects that will pollinize too, but not as well as a honeybee. And that way you get a good return on your money and your labor and whatever particular plants you have. Now, I know one thing. You can't hurt or kill a tomato plant, no matter how badly you treat it. And if you put it in a very decent location and take care of it well, you'll have more tomatoes than you can possibly eat in one growing season. So I made the mistake of putting 6 of them in just for the heck of it, with about 3 green pepper plants and a couple couple of hot pepper plants. And those puppies, we had to pick tomatoes every day. When they began to ripen, there were ripe tomatoes every day. I got so tired of eating tomatoes for dinner and seeing them all stacked up on one shelf in the icebox that I thought, I'm going to hold back on the tomatoes a little bit the next gardening season. And so when I do it this year, I'm going to pick maybe three different kinds and one of each of those kinds and see how it does and see what happens, because they were a hit. They loved it. And the green peppers loved it. And the red peppers loved it. So if you're chomping at the bit for your garden to get going, be patient. You can try it in the pots right off the bat, because that's something safe. But actually putting them in the ground, it's a little too damp and a little too cold. And maybe they may not die if you put a plant in, if you buy a plant in a pony pack or something like that, and you plant a pepper plant or tomato plant or whatever. It's going to sit there and not grow until the soil actually warms up to a certain temperature that activates that root system and says, hey, it's time to go. It's time to grow. Let's get with it. So that's just one of my small tips. And if you have a phone call, by the way, 673-4464, and no matter what the question is, I will give you a good answer, and it'll be correct. So at any rate, the garden stuff this year is now that last year was my first year with my raised planter box. It was an experimental thing. I just wanted to see how well everything did. And I made a few mistakes, and now I know what to do, and I know that I can raise more variety and more numbers of things, but I have to do it a little bit more. I just can't do it haphazardly. I have to actually put things in order, if you will, so that it's easier to harvest, easier to weed, or easier to do all the things, the little bit of fertilizer that I use in it. And my mix in my box is, it's a combination of topsoil and decomposed compost that's been, 10 years old or something like that. It's very dark and very fluffy. And I put in, 4 or 5 inches of that on top, and then work it into the soil, into the topsoil. And then I throw a little bit of sand in there as well. And sand has certain qualities that the topsoil doesn't. And I'm not sure that it increases the vitality of the plant, but it doesn't hurt the vitality of the plant. And it's also an ingredient that would make sure that you would have proper good drainage. And like I say, good drainage and proper drainage is a key to success. You can always add water, but if you put too much in poor draining soil, it's going to cause you problems in the long run. So that's, and I've only said that probably 300 times in the last 20 years on this show. So, but growing plants is always a learning process. No matter what you do, no matter how many years you've done it, you have to consider, again, soil type, sun. Where's the sun? How many hours of sun? The my water source and the type of fertilizer I use. The drainage, of course, is important. So your soil has to be loosed for the roots to develop very quickly, but not so loose that it can't hold a plant up. In other words, you just don't want to have some fluffy material in there and your tomato plant grows, just goes fast, and it gets up to, 2.5 feet tall and falls over because there's no substance to the soil. So you have to get a happy medium in there of good drainage and soil that will hold a plant straight, and it won't succumb to the winds and things like that and kind of lay on the ground. But full sun is best, of course, but you can still have success with part sun. If it's like from noon to sunset, that's okay. If it's kind of shady in the morning, I live in a canyon, so I have various times and amounts of sun and shade, and my best sun times are from about 9 o'clock in the morning till maybe 6:15 in the evening, and then my place is in solid shade. But that was like primo, and everything did very, very well. And so as long as you have, my estimation, as long as you have 5 or 6 hours of good sunlight, especially in the warmer part of the day, you're going to have good production from any of the vegetables that you plant. So we'll be back in a minute, eh?
Yeah, we will. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, 421 at News Radio, 93.9 FM, 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
4:23, the afternoon report coming at 5. For 20 years, he has been the commissioner of dirt around the Umpqua Valley, duly so noted and notarized and authenticated and all of that, providing information and rolling on even to share his insights now that you're sort of retired.
Yeah, sort of. I still go in every morning and help the new owner teach her new things, and you know where to get stuff and where to buy trees and where to buy shrubs and where to buy ground covers. And she's actually been out on a couple landscaping jobs and actually participated with the crew and has I gave her the basics of bidding a job, doing an estimate, and she's done a couple of those. I don't know how successful she's been done yet with that, but they did get one job, and so. But you know, this what I've noticed this year is it's not as busy as it has been in the past, and I know part of it's the rain and the cold, but I think part of it's probably the economy and all the other wherewithal that's happening. So it hasn't been overwhelmingly busy yet.
But then you'll hit this peak when we get some dry weather.
Yep.
Eventually, if it really ever happens.
Yeah.
And then people are going to look around and go, oh, whoops, we need to do this.
Yeah, we need to get to the nursery quick. Let's go. And then the place will be jammed, and you'll be. And then in the middle of all that, Mother's Day appears.
Ah.
And it's Mother's Day week. And it's that's an insane week with 4 or 5 people delivering. So we've signed on to help her deliver, and our florists will go crazy and all that. But it's and then that's when a lot of folks are coming in as well. So it's just a circus. It's just a circus, and you just run your legs off. But anyway, new gardens that you're going to plant. Now, when you get these new plants and you plant them, don't fertilize them right off the bat. And, you know, whether they're seeds or small plants, don't, you know, small plants from like pony packs, don't do that. Let them go for a week or two and let them get rooted and growing a little bit. And then you can fertilize lightly, maybe 2 or 3 times during the growing season. And again, very minimally. Your soil is good to begin with, so that's a plus because you've got good compost in it or whatever. And but one thing, you know, the new plants, the roots are like as thin as hair. And if you over-fertilize, you can kill them very quickly and easily. And I know I speak from experience, having killed many, many plants being overzealous with fertilization because I wanted them to grow fast and big quick. But just very minimally, and then don't put any fertilizer up around the stem. Stay a few inches away from the stem, and Read the directions well, and but like I say, just a little bit. If it's a granular fertilizer, just a little bit, and then maybe in another month you do a little bit more, maybe a little heavier, because by that time the plants are very well rooted in. They've grown, they've flowered. Some of them are setting fruit or vegetables at that time, and you can give them a little bit more, and that just keeps that their system supercharged, if you will, and productive. And you want it to the point where it's productive, but you don't want it to the point where it shuts down or shrivels up because you over-fertilize it, you overfed it. And if you're new at this game, it's going to take some practice to find out where that level of watering and fertilizing lie, and where you get the best results and where you get the disastrous results. Because I've been in both places. I mean, of course, I lived on ranches and stuff growing up, so we always had big gardens, but we had, you know, not just me, but my mom, my dad, and a couple of ranch hands were always working it, because there'd be a half an acre or an acre or something of garden where everybody on the ranch ate the produce from our garden. And you just learn from that. But back in those days, we used manure from the cattle to till into the ground and use it as compost and fertilizer. And that seemed to be a good balance because it was not hot, and it was a good balance all the way through. But nowadays, not many people do that. They go to the co-op or the hardware store or somewhere, and they'll look at the 44 different kinds of fertilizer that are on the shelf and try to figure out which one to use. Well, look for one that says this is for garden plants, this is for vegetable fertilizer, and a well-balanced formula. There's always three numbers on a fertilizer package. By law, that has to be. First one is nitrogen, the percentage of nitrogen. The second one is the percentage of phosphorus. And the third number is the percentage of potassium. So the nitrogen is going to increase growth quickly. So you have to be very careful. Like I say, you don't want to over-fertilize. A little bit goes a long way. And if you need to, you can always add a little bit more later on. That's not a problem. But the phosphorus and the potassium are for root growth and fruit production, fruit or vegetable production. And when you get that balance and you get that swing and you see what, you know, you remember what you did, write it down if you can't remember it, and say at the end of the season or in the mid-season, you say, gosh, those plants are doing so well, and look at your notes that you took and say, yeah, okay, now I know how to do this. And by the same token, if they're if they're frying under the sun or something like that and you can't figure it out, look at what you did. How did you do it? Did you do it correctly? Did you do the right type of fertilizer? And there's a lot of little things that can go wrong if you don't pay strict attention to what the directions on the bag say or the amounts that you put on. That's a critical thing to get it right, and you'll have great success from that. But exactly like I said earlier, don't fertilize the newly planted ones. You know, put them in the ground, and the next 15 minutes you fertilize them. Don't do that. Wait for a week or two. Just see that they get rooted in. See that they're growing. You can see, because those vegetable plants are gonna pop up real quick. They're gonna just go, whoa, man! And pretty soon you'll be amazed at how quickly they grow. Well, in that process, then you can fertilize accordingly. And you're not going to hurt them because you know that the root system is in there. It's moving. It's got the plant anchored, and it's doing its job, and you're good to go. Now, you want to water with the same mindset. Now, I know you folks that have listened to me for many years how I harp on over water. Well, the same goes with the vegetables. They don't need a lot of water. They just need to be damp. That's it. You don't have to go out there and flood them every day or anything like that. And when you do water, you water in the morning, not in the heat of the day or in the late evening after the sun goes back down, so that you're not wasting any of that water, and the plant is receptive to what you're doing, and the leaves don't get scorched because there's drops of water laying on the leaves, and there's no sun to magnify it, so consequently it works, and you get that, you know. If you don't know how much good you're doing, all you have to do is dig down beside the plant in your loose soil, and you'll see, hey, it's damp, it's okay. But if you dig down 3 or 4 inches or so and it's bone dry, then you know you should water it a little bit heavier or maybe a little bit more often. But you've got to get the feel of your ground. And every ground, every yard, every person has a different soil composition, if you will. And some of them amend their soils heavily, and some don't. Some just grind up the clay until it's totally ground up and plant in that, which is okay because clay has a lot of nutrition because it doesn't drain well. But the bad side of it is, since it doesn't drain well, you can drown the roots too if you water it too much. So pay attention to your amount of water and the duration of your watering, and also you can save money by not turning it on for an hour and forgetting it and going to the store to get something or anything like that. But water with the same mindset. You always can add more, but once you get put too much in there, that's when the damage begins. And like I say, 3 or 4 inches down is dry, water it. A good soil with amendments will drain quickly, but still retain some of that soil moisture. And you just check your soil frequently, every day, every other day, just to, that way you learn how it's, what's happening. And once you learn that process, once you learn what your soil does, after a while, you don't have to go down there and test it and feel it and see what's happening. So
you know why I got a sprinkler system like 20 years ago?
Why?
Because it was that time when I left the, you know, just the regular hose and a sprinkler running, and then went to the store only to have 2 or 3 other things happen, and then I came home 2.5 hours later and water was heading down the street, and I realized the bill was going to be quite high.
Yeah. Well, you're not the only one that has done that. I've noticed that as I've driven around Roseburg the last 100 years and seeing, why are those people watering in the middle of the day and it's 100 degrees? I wonder why. And you go by an hour later and the water's still on and it's running down the sidewalk or running down the street. They forgot about it, or their automatic system didn't work properly and there was a malfunction and they didn't catch it. So, and your water bill goes up accordingly.
Yes, it does. We'll be back with more in a moment. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, the Commissioner of Dirt, 434 on News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Afternoon 4:38, the afternoon report coming up at 5 with Douglas County's news team. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show at 673-4464. If you've got a question this afternoon, you know, if you haven't looked around at your yard lately, you might want to do it. And in fact, we actually have a phone call now, so we're going to pick that up. And you are on Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show Live. What's your question?
Hey, Kyle and Mike, Tom Nelson calling.
Tom, you're retiring, too.
I know, so that means I'm going to have more time for yard work.
Yeah, but I retired as well, so, you know, I don't know if I can help you, man.
You're not retired from being the Commissioner of Dirt, though.
I know. What's your question, Tom?
So my question is, if I plant some dogwood trees, will they be consumed by the deer?
Do you have a deer problem? Are there a lot of them in your yard at times?
There's a number of them.
Well, they won't be consumed, but they will bite the ends. If you have some sort of flagging or fencing or ribbon or something that you can put, say, 3 stakes in the ground and wrap it with red logging tape or orange logging tape and let some streamers blow in the wind and make motion, they'll pretty much leave it alone. But if you don't do that, they might just, you might be surprised at how well they prune it.
Okay. That was my question.
Yeah, but don't invest that kind of money in dogwood trees unless you're prepared to protect them for a while.
Great.
Okay, buddy.
Well, I'm going to be listening now to the Commissioner of Dirt Show.
Okay.
I do anyway.
Well, good. I'm glad. So, I listen to you every morning, for crying out loud.
Well, that's soon going to come to an end.
I know.
So, anyway, okay. Well, thank you.
You're welcome, sir. Thanks for the call.
All right, Tom Nelson there, and you can hear our podcast with him from Inside Douglas County today up at 541radio.com as he gets ready to retire on Friday.
Yeah, it's amazing, this retirement stuff. I don't know what to do with myself. I mean, I used to have a real, real full schedule, and I don't have that anymore. And I go, well, let's see, what can I do now? Can I take a drive somewhere or get a hamburger or what do I do? at any rate, I
don't think I'm going to have to be worrying about that for any time in the near future at all. So.
Why not?
No.
You're always walking around the earth and everything and running everywhere, so you've got plenty of things to do.
All right, very good.
So every year, I'm still on the gardening thing, okay? Every year when I prepare my garden, I always add a little more compost and a little more topsoil to my mix with the old soil. And the old soil is not really that old. It's just been, it's just used a little bit, but I always freshen it up with some new things. And I just mix it into, say, the top three or four inches with a garden rake, because it's so loose I don't have to till it anymore. And I don't want to lift my tiller up into my raised bed, less labor that way. And then some clean sand can be used if you have a little bit of clay in there. Well, that sand will cut through that clay and lighten it up, and that's good. And the bottom line is that any organic material you mix in is going to improve the overall productivity of your garden. It's that simple. The more you put into it, the more you're going to get out of it. I know that's kind of a Lithuanian cliche, but that's what I am. And a vegetable garden can be relaxing if it's not too large. And as you become more experienced, you can add more ground to your growing area if you so desire. But let me warn you, if you're a first-time vegetable gardener, don't let your imagination get the better of you or the better of your common sense in the size of your garden. It's too big, and you may lose interest for future gardens because there's so much work that you created for yourself and so much that needs to be done. It's like almost a full-time job, for goodness sakes, you know. So start small and do a good job, gain experience, learn how much labor is involved in growing food, and after a few years of experience, you'll be able to judge how much you can handle and be successful. It's that simple. I know. I speak from, like I say, experience, having done too large of a garden, or thinking, oh, yeah, I can get that done. That'll be good. Well, one time at the nursery, we had I had 8 acres there, so a friend of mine approached me and said, well, let's do a garden together. I'll help you. Oh, okay. And he was good help, good guy, good friend. And he had a tendency to, you know, do it a little bit larger than what I had anticipated. But what the heck, there was two of us, so I went along with his his suggestions and the size. And we planted corn and tomatoes and squash and potatoes and, you know, all the good basic stuff that's easy to grow. And as time went on and this garden became a reality, the weeds also became a reality, too. And you need to weed your garden. That's all there is to it. So if you have rows that are wide enough for a small tiller to go down between, and that's a good thing. But if not, you're going to do a lot of hoeing or pulling. And it's okay, but it's not fun. And because you're watering this thing because you want to produce food. But that water also produces those weeds. And so consequently, you're working yourself into something. You're going, I hate gardening, man. It's too stinking much work. I don't want to do this anymore. But we did it. We did it, and we had so much We had so much produce. He took all he wanted. We took all we wanted. And then we had so much still out there, from tomatoes to potatoes to corn. I mean, anything you could think of, we had too much of after two families were well stocked. So we started, when the customers came into the nursery, we were putting vegetables in grocery bags and asking folks when they come in whether they bought anything or not. Would you like some vegetables? There's no cost. Oh, yeah. We had in this bag half full of potatoes and onions, and they're going, wow, that's a lot. And I said, yeah, we got plenty. Lenny, don't worry about it. If you want more, you run out and come on back. We'll give you some more. And we were a big hit that summer. But the following summer, we weren't such a big hit because we were smart and we learned from our previous enterprise that soil out in the back of the nursery is primo, and it'll grow anything. It'll grow it quick and it'll grow it well. So consequently, we sized down the whole operation by about 60% and still had sufficient quantity to feed two or three families for quite a few months, and that was good. So don't make that mistake. Don't think, oh, I'm going to make a big garden, that way I'll have food forever. Yeah, you will. And you'll not be able to eat it all. You'll have to give it away or sometimes even throw it away. So that's why I converted to small raised beds. It's less labor. It's easier to do. But you can still have too much to eat if you don't think it through and say, what do I really like and what do I really, don't like? But, we eat a lot of potatoes, mashed potatoes, fried potatoes, French fries, whatever. And so I always go crazy on the potato plants. But the potatoes, you put them in a cool, dark place, they can be okay for several months, actually. And so you can have potatoes, when you first harvest them all the way till the following spring, if you store them properly. And they're a good staple food. And you can make potato soup, mashed potatoes, fried potatoes, all that. Onions are the same way. In fact, some of the onions that we didn't get earlier last year, we got during this last winter and last fall, because you'd see some sprouts out there, dig in there, and there's this beautiful onion. So my wife would be out there and harvesting onions. And we only had one row of those guys, but there must have been, 30, 40 plants. But it was there, and it was fresh. It wasn't rotten because we had good drainage in our raised beds. That was the key right there. But don't do too much. If you've never done it before, start small. Get a book on, if you went to the box store, one of the box stores around, they'll have all kinds of how-to books. And they'll have one, how to grow a successful vegetable garden in your backyard. Get it. It's worth it. They've got colored photos and illustrations and all kinds of information. And it'd be a lot of a repetition of what you hear me say, but it will help you greatly if you follow their directions and don't go totally nuts with how many bean plants you plant or tomato plants you plant. You're going to overplant anyway, but try to use everything that you produce and you'll be well satisfied. And if you're a canner, no problem. My wife doesn't can. She has no desire to can, so we eat it fresh, or if it's stored, we eat it over the winter or at least over the fall. So, and If you don't want to do this, just remember there are several farming operations around here where you have a large selection of vegetables. Brosai Farms out in Winston and Cruz Farms in Garden Valley. And they're professionals. They always have good quality produce. And they, since they are professionals, they don't plant it all on the same day. So consequently, their long-term vision is to have vegetables, et cetera, for, 5-6 months all the way down into the fall, so you can actually go back and get them then. And we in our homes don't think quite that way because we're not professional farmers. I'm a semi-professional farmer. Okay, how's that? But And the same thing, and this, I'm going to switch horses here a little bit. And again, I've got some repetition that I've probably spoken about over the years. But I've seen the same thing in home landscaping projects, overplanting, getting way too much. Some homeowners like a real full look to their yard. I get that. But what happens in 5 years? What does that initial full look like in 5 years? Well, the landscape can get overgrown with too many shrubs and trees, and the plant removal process begins. And all that time and money that you spent putting them in, and the front end of that project is wasted because you spent maybe $1,000 in plant materials, which is not outrageous if you got a normal size yard. But after 3 to 5 years, when they're really growing well and you've taken care of them, but you put too many in too close together, you have to either prune them significantly or thin them out by removing plants so that it's not a shelter for wolverines or something like that. You need to have some airspace around the plants. It's more healthy that way.
So you mean you need to plan before you start?
Yes, that's a good thing. Plan before you start.
All right, back with more in a moment. Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden Show, 451 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
Entering the final 6 minutes of the Mike Winter's Lawn and Garden program for this week.
6 minutes? That's it? I got 4 pages of notes here. Come on, man. Anyway, when I speak to new clients, landscaping clients, I always ask what they visualize for their yard. I want to get their ideas. I want to get I want to hear what their desires are, what their ultimate look is going to be. And a lot of times they just want too much. And after explaining to them about plant size, plant size and plant growth rate, etc., then they begin to scale back a little bit on their vision. And I reassure them that don't worry, even if we scale back and use less plants in a period of time, 3 to 5 years, you're still going to have that good full look. But if you put as many in as you thought you needed in that 3 to 5 year time frame, you're going to have a real mess on your hands and you won't be able to keep up with the pruning, and it'll look kind of shaggy and things will start dying because there's way too much and not enough room to grow, not enough sunlight, not enough water, not enough whatever the plants need to grow and prosper. And so they begin to scale back on their vision, and that's all part of the planning process, all part of the design process. And in the end, it saves them money initially and much labor in the long run. And so be conservative in your vision of your landscape. Just, you know, you're not Disneyland, and you don't want Disneyland because they got like 100 people that take care of their landscape. But, you know, we here don't have the time, usually the full time, to keep our yards looking pristine all the time, and we have to have help, hired help from there. And as I have shared in my past, my first home, up on Leland Street off of Douglas, was very old, and so were the plants that had been planted for 30 years prior to my buying the home, okay? And it was the most overgrown yard on the street, climbing roses covering the roof, a huge plum tree next to my front porch trying to get into my front door, and a 15-foot privacy hedge on one side of the house, and about an 80-foot-long rose hedge along the street, trying to eat any passing cars that might have been going by, and many more overgrown shrubs against the house. It was a nightmare. And as I said this before, it took me like 3 years just to clean and remove hundreds of giant shrubs, and then another 2 years after I finally got it clean to so I could see what I actually had for space, it took another 2 years to redo the landscaping. And in my 5 year yard, in my 5 years, my yard went from the worst landscape on the street to the nicest landscape on the street. And then we sold it quickly to the first couple that came to the door to buy. They loved it. It was gorgeous. And it was an old house. It was, oh gosh, 40, 50 years old way back then. And that was back in the 60s, okay? 1969, 70, right in that time. But I learned that a neat, clean yard was easy to a quick sale. I learned that right off the bat. And the first impression of any home sale is the yard. When a new buyer comes up to a home that's for sale, they pull into the driveway and there's the yard. What does the yard look like? Is it neat? Is it clean? Is it healthy looking? Or is it overgrown with way too many shrubs, or a lawn that's kind of brownish in some spots and green in other spots, and trees too close together or too many? And that sets a tone in their mindset about, I don't know if I want to buy all this work. So it's always good to minimalize your landscapes. It's you can always, again, add more that you want later as you want. But learn your plants. Learn what they do. Learn how they grow. And it'll set the tone for the neighborhood, too. If you do a real nice landscaping job on your house and the guy across the street or the guy two houses up stops and asks you questions, and how did you do this, or why did you do this, or what is that particular plant, you can give them a good answer. And pretty soon the whole street looks pretty good because they've done a great job. But like I say, the first impression of any home sale is the yard. That's what they're seeing. That's what people, the new owners or the new buyers, are looking at. And it sets the tone for the rest of the deal. But if you put some beautiful blooming shrubs and a nice shade tree, the sale usually is made pretty quickly. So if you're thinking of selling but don't know where to start, you can call me, because I have a side business now. It's just I'm a consultant and a designer, but I'm not going to do the actual landscape work. But I've been only doing it for like 50 years, so I know a few things. And now I have a new, it's small business. You can give it a call and we can talk about it. So thank you for listening. Hope you enjoyed it. Hope you learned something from it. And I enjoy it every day I do it.
And what number do they call you at?
Oh, how about 679-4100? That's my home phone.
All right. Very good.
Okay. Thank you.
Wrapping up the program for today, the Afternoon Report coming up in just a moment. It is 5 o'clock.